Please be seated. We have, good morning, we have today a hearing on 0817 in the matter of the creation of an Access to Justice Commission. The presenter is Diane Deal, President of the State Bar of Wisconsin. I have John Ebbett speaking, David Russell, Michael Thornring, David Hansen. If anyone else would like to speak, they may. I would appreciate you giving your name to the marshal. And we will begin with Ms. Deal.
Thank you. Madam Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court, may it please the Court, I am Diane Deal, the President of the Wisconsin State Bar, and I could not be more proud to come before the Court today to ask the Court to adopt the State Bar's proposal to form an Access to Justice Commission. Some 21 states and a number of other regions and areas, including, I believe, the District of Columbia, have previously adopted Access to Justice Commissions and have found across the country that in terms of creating momentum, focus, and drive towards the resolution of the problems confronting underrepresented litigants in the civil court system, there is no better tool or program or approach to creating focus on the needs of the underrepresented community. There's no better tool in terms of creating collaboration, unity, a focus, a statewide focus on helping those individuals who currently are underserved in a justice system that becomes more and more complex. This court's approach has been one of leadership and one of purpose and direction, and is known across the country for assisting in helping litigants succeed in the litigation system. This, we believe, with the experience of other states and areas, territories, that this is the way to create the mission that will bring the stakeholders throughout the state together to help in a recognized formal way create some consensus and unity across.
Who are the stakeholders, Ms. Deal?
I believe that the stakeholders are the court system as the leadership of the entire judicial system. I believe that the stakeholders are the people of the state of Wisconsin, and those people are represented by the legislature, by the executive branch and the judiciary. I believe that the stakeholders are the state bar members of the state of Wisconsin who seek to deliver access to justice in a valued, accessible system.
Ms. Deal, I guess I have a long memory, and about 3 years ago, the Board of Governors of the State Bar debated, apparently very seriously, about suing the Wisconsin Supreme Court over a $50 assessment for legal services for the poor. What kind of support do you have from the Board of Governors?
This petition was approved by the Board of Governors unanimously. This petition, with its unanimous approval at the State Bar Board of Governors, received a commitment for setting aside reserve funding to fund this commission for a period of 3 years. Our Board of Governors passed all of the recommendations in the Access to Justice study, and I believe stands ready to establish to the court that the bar is indeed a partner and wanting to progress and wanting to do this.
How do you see this fitting with WISSTAF, which seems to have a very similar mission?
I believe that WISSTAF is a vital and important body and will be the entity always that helps focus on fundraising and administering IOLTA funds and administering any funds, really, that would be raised by the Access to Justice Commission. And that's probably a misstatement. Any funds that would become available through concerted efforts of the Access to Justice Commission. We are not attempting to usurp WSSTAF. We believe and hope and indeed have the support of WSSTAF moving forward.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
What happens at the end of the three-year funding? And then as I read the materials, the hope is that the funding source after it finishes with the state bar might be from the courts, might be from the legislature, and maybe continued state bar or other resources. Well, there's only so much money to go around. As you well know, as president of the bar, there's a sum certain. So what happens at the end of 3 years if you want us to come up with money and we say, okay, let's impose an assessment? I mean, you know, we don't, unlike the federal government that now apparently is printing money, we don't do that. We get money. And so we might, to follow up Justice Crook's question, have to impose assessment. I don't know how else we get money. How is that going to fare given the history that Justice Crook's referenced?
It's a very fair question. And first of all, the idea of a sunsetting commission is one that is well known and has been used in some of these other commissions. Jeff Brown of the State Bar can identify those particular commissions if that is a needed informational piece. But the idea is this commission will be self-sustaining or will be supported in a significant enough way to justify its own continuation rather than finding an assessment or some other approach. I can't predict the future. I think the idea is to create a commission, a body of smart minds, a body of people dedicated to the cause of expanding the access to legal services, and those smart minds will find the pool, will find the funds, will find the ability to either continue and justify this activity, or it will appropriately sunset. We think we're up to the challenge. The bar is convinced enough of the appropriateness of this activity that it is willing to commit those funds in that fashion without any strings attached to allow this commission to go forward as basically the best way we can envision to expand that pool.
Ms. Deal, I've talked to you about this petition. I've spoken with Mr. Brown about the petition, Mr. Gonring, and Judge Sankovitz. And I agree that the court has been a leader in the state, indeed nationally, in attempting to provide access to justice. It has done that through a variety of ways, including strong support and organization of WSSTAF, its $50 assessment that Justice Crooks referred to, its very strong and pervasive self-representation program that has been done. And so I think that the court's bona fides in this area are established. The issue today is what is a good step, it seems to me, or a next step in promoting equal justice for all, regardless of economic status. Because this is designed for helping litigants in the civil system when they cannot fully afford a counsel. And even self-representation with assistance is not as good as having competent counsel. I think the court recognizes that, but we are in an interim position, and there are some people who want to be self-represented, and they have a constitutional right. So my questions are, go to the purpose of this commission. When I first read these materials, it struck me as that among several goals, the primary goal was to raise money, and probably through the legislature. And the lobbying effort was very successful a couple of years ago in the first time getting money from the legislature. When I read the proposed order that was filed, now, are you in favor of this proposed order?
In favor of it?
This order?
I like the order. The order was is certainly not the only way to create the commission. We have proposed an order that has the formulation of creating a Supreme Court rule and created a new chapter number. We don't know that the court needs that authority.
What do you suggest?
I think that if the court simply enters an order, that it would be sufficient, but it's easy enough to
and not
those.
Not do it through an SCR. Is that your point?
It doesn't need to.
Because your petition was a petition, but it had no order. It had the mission, it had the background, it had proposals, but it wasn't an order that we could present to the court and say, adopt this, right?
Right.
So that's why you submitted an order.
That's exactly right.
Okay. Just want to clarify the documents. But now let's go back to what is going to be the primary mission. Is it fundraising?
No.
Okay. It's not fundraising. What is it?
The primary mission is to collaborate the stakeholders, to put the people at the table, to say this is not just a court problem, this is not just a judicial system problem. This is a problem that confronts the entire
state. No, but if they're going to collaborate, they got to have a. What is the end goal of the collaboration? I mean, you're just not going to. I mean, I collaborate with a lot of people, and I hope they have no end goal. Then I don't have to do anything. You know, I just have to chat with them. That part is easy. I want to know what the end goal is.
The end goal is to bring representation and services to more people in the state.
I know that, but then now we have to break. Ms. Steele, we have to break that down. That's too broad. I mean, I'm very concrete. I wanna know what you're gonna do. And you may not be the person that will state that, and I accept that. And in follow up to Justice Crooks, what I was gonna say is, I wonder if we couldn't get more mileage very rapidly by just giving the bar a Christmas present and increase the assessment to $100 and raise $750,000. We don't have to talk about it. We don't have to collaborate with anybody and spin a lot of wheels, you know.
Well, let's discuss that further before we take a vote.
I have other business.
All right.
I can't stay.
Do you have impeachment rules in the state bar? I didn't look before I proposed that. But that is what I'm really, in essence, asking you is, because if your mission, which is one of the petition's goals, was to look at the judicial system and try and, if your petition is to look at the judicial system and try and find places where it could be simplified or changed so that access is easier. I mean, that is an immense task requiring an immense staff. I think it's a very worthwhile task. I mean, I think the lawyers would appreciate, as well as the non-lawyers, simplifying the system. But I mean, that is gigantic. You can't do that at $20,000 for the first year or even your other two-year budgets. So that's why I keep stressing, I want to know what your mission is. And if your mission is bringing together everybody to collaborate, you've got three non-lawyers on this. Is that right? Three non-lawyers. Everybody else is a judge or a lawyer or a member of the bar. You have two members of the legislature. Which I think is great, although legislators have their own agenda and very often send staff, but that doesn't bother me either. I think that's wonderful. But it's not very, what shall I say, doesn't really represent the stakeholders. Where are people that deal in the business community, that deal with foundations, that deal with money? I mean, where are the people who, other than the couple of legal service providers, where are the people who are the objects of this? You know, poor people have organizations, too, and have voices, and they're not here. Right. So I have a, in theory, well, I wouldn't say that. Practically, I want to see equal justice for all. And I don't want people who are poor and cannot afford lawyers, I don't want them to be second-class citizens in the court system. I don't think anyone on the court wants that. But I don't also don't want to have window dressing that will not move towards the goal. We're not going to accomplish the goal next year or the year after or for a long time. But we'll accomplish it within my lifetime, which is going to be long. So that's what we have to do. That's what our goal.
Right. Well, two things in response to that. The first is I understand the problem is massive, and unless we start having a coordinated discussion, we can't begin to solve it. So we need to start somewhere.
Agreed.
The second piece is in terms of the reasons for the composition of the committee and some of the other aspects of the court's question, I'd like to defer, if the court approves, to Judge Sankovitz, who is the chair of the committee and can talk very persuasively, I believe, about the reasons for the proposed composition.
And I want to say, Judge Sankovitz was a chair of the committee. He and I spoke during the operation of the committee, and I attended, along with other members of the court, your first Equal Justice Conference in Milwaukee. You've got another one coming up in April in Madison. I intend to be there for that one. You've got a long-time commitment to this program. Thank you, Ms. Dielen. You'll have a chance to... I'm sorry, Justice Prosser.
Yeah, I would like to ask some questions. Madam President, could you outline what commitment the bar has made over the next 3 years?
In terms of financial support for this entity, the bar has set aside a identified reserve fund for access to justice projects, including the funding of this particular commission. The amount of that reserve fund is $300,000.
And you would expect to spend that over the next 3 years, or?
I think that depends on what the commission sets as its own goals. We are creating an entity that will set its own work mission and develop its own program. We can't begin to predict what that particular independent body will do. Is it possible? Certainly. Is it possible that the bar will also fund other access programs out of this fund? That may happen as well, but the primary commitment is to fund this commission for 3 years, and we have shown our resolve to do that. Further to the question from Justice Crooks previously, we have that strong a commitment to this project and this pressing need in our society that we have earmarked that level of funding.
And what do you anticipate will happen at the end of the 3 years?
I believe that the commission will dedicate itself to attacking the problem and identifying other means to perpetuate its existence. And we have a large and hopefully representative body that will be appointed from many sectors, and those wise minds will be people committed to solving this problem and will be people who will have insight and be able to form new approaches and look for resources and tools and figure out a way to perpetuate itself and further the mission of increasing access. And so I can't tell you, I don't have future plan for this. It's not structured. It is a plan to survive.
Would it be fair to say that your original petition anticipated that the legislature would, which would be a partner in this, would come up with about $50,000 a year?
I don't know that that is fair. I was involved in the final drafting of that petition, and I don't think that there was any level of anticipated funding from any particular entity for this. I think that what we felt was that if a group of entities pursuing funding for civil legal services but not coordinated and not working together, and if that group managed to raise $1 million in a legislative grant, we felt that a coordinated effort with people working from the same songbook at the same time and supportive of one another could do better. And I think that the sense of what's in the petition about the legislature really relates to that sort of notion that we could do better if we were under a coalition, if we had the approach that was in concert. We are not aligned against one another. We need to all be in favor of the solution. And if we can't find a way to align ourselves via a commission in this fashion, then we don't deserve to succeed past 3 years.
Now, my impression, and just help me if I misunderstood this, my impression was at the end of the 3 years that you sort of anticipated that the legislature would come up with $50,000 to $60,000, that the court would come up with about $50,000 to $60,000, and that the buyer would kick in $50,000 to $60,000. I get that under sub C, funding and administration, in the original petition.
You have a provision in there that says thereafter the court, the judiciary, the legislature, and the executive shall fund, or words to that effect. And that's what I think might give someone the impression. And that would mean, in effect, if the legislature and executive get funds from the legislature. So that means the legislature is really going to be the funder, if that's what you're anticipating, and that's going to be at a level depending on what your mission is.
And I'm late to the discussion. I worked, Your Honor, on this petition after initial drafting and after extensive work by the Access Committee. I never heard particular numbers or particular sources. I think that it's clear that the money in government always comes from the people at large and revenues that are generated by the state of Wisconsin. We're not certain that those will be the extent and only source of funding for this commission.
We got a document, I believe, yesterday, a draft order. Mm-hmm. Where did that come from?
That came from the work of the final drafting committee, Judge Sankovitz and Jeff Brown of the State Bar, and a number of us reviewed and attempted to create something that would give the court a direction in terms of formulating an order. It is not meant to be preemptive. It was a response to the question of what would this look like created in an order, since our petition did not include an order. And so we were attempting to give some alternative and some look at what this might look like in the format that you see there.
What was the discussion leading to the decision to create a formal court agency?
The questions that we understood were percolating and circulating among the members of the court were, what is the court's authority to appoint this commission? We think, from all the research, reading, and writing that we have done with respect to this, that the court has the plenary authority to make this order that is clear and uncontested in the Wisconsin Constitution. You are empowered to do this. What we were attempting to do was suggest a singular vehicle for doing that, including the creation of a Supreme Court rule, which is something that the court has done on numerous occasions, to create the WISDAT, to create the Client Security Fund, for example. So it was an effort to address some of those questions and concerns that had been raised by members of the court.
The chief in her comments said, isn't the primary goal to raise money? And it seemed to me, President Deal, that you kind of disavowed that.
I think that this is an effort to coordinate that fundraising effort. Do I think that eventually this body will be seen as an entity that is supportive of fundraising or moves into a direction? I wish I had a perfect crystal ball sitting here as I address the court. Really, at this point, fundraising is not that particular primary goal. It is the coordination of efforts. It is the idea, when we talk about expanding the pie and broadening the support, does that mean that ultimately we are trying to increase financial support for the cause of access to justice? Absolutely. Does it mean that we will register as lobbyists initially and become that lobbying entity that lobbies the legislature or files as a 501c3 fund solicitor to try and find charitable grants? I think that what is envisioned and what has worked in other places is that the innovations, the ideas, the new resources, the coordination of those efforts has emanated from these kinds of commissions and bodies in a way that doesn't necessarily create the hands-on approach by this body, but that creates an overall systemic focus that will hopefully, again, focus, expand, broaden, and create a way to expand the pie. You know, if that translates directly into fundraising, eventually that is probably a reality. It is not a reality that we will seek to divert funds from WISDAF or Legal Services Corporation or any of those sorts of directions.
I interpret Justice Pross's, one of his questions, a little differently, but Ms. Steele, one of the questions I've asked you and others with whom I've spoken is, why do you, the bar can do this by itself. Bar can convene a whole group of people. It did in its report called Bridging the Gap. Other states do it without the court. Why do you need a court order?
It's about half and half. It's nearly half and half. Who does it without a court order and who does it?
What do you need us for? We can't raise money. So putting a justice on this and judges on it and then using it to raise funds instantly creates problems. Instantly. So what do you... Why you can have a judicial advisory committee. I sit on a number of judicial advisory committees to groups, but never appear on their stationery for any number of reasons that, other than as a judicial advisory committee, but not for anything that deals with funds. What do you need it for?
I think Judge Stankovitz wrote you a letter
okay.
in support of
my, that. My question will be directed to every speaker that speaks in favor of this. So,
right.
As to mission, costs, and why you need a court order.
I think we need the court's leadership, commitment, direction, and if nothing else, the...
So what if we give you a letter, say, we're 100% behind you, maybe even 1,000% behind you.
This is a problem that is systemic. It is not just the bar.
Okay.
That's...
Thank you, Ms. Deal, and you will have an opportunity to conclude if you wish. We can have a Judge Sankovitz next. Would you like him next? Okay,
yes,
Judge
like.
Sankovitz.
Thank you.
Thank you. And for the Marshal's benefit, the last name is S-A-N-K-O-V-I-T-Z. I'll start with the Chief's rhetorical question, and it is a rhetorical question, because the Chief of all of the members of this Court has been a leader, a judicial leader in expanding access to justice. We know from the history of expanding access to justice across the country that without judges in the lead, it goes, well, it doesn't go nowhere. It certainly doesn't go far enough. Because the legislature can hardly take seriously the needs of justice when justices don't put themselves to the forefront of it. So a letter of support would be great, but it would be seen as a letter of support. Those efforts of judges who lead the effort, who inspire the people who follow them, who come up with the ideas, who enact those ideas in their very courts, those are the people who impress legislators, they impress foundations, they impress the people that they serve, that this truly is one of our primary goals. And we know this is one of our primary goals. As we said, those judges and I who submitted the letter to you, PPAC has identified this goal as one of the primary goals of the court for now 8 years running. No other priority of this court gets as much attention as expanding access to justice. So having an organization that is separate from the court may be successful, but not as successful as one that is led by the court. And that's been demonstrated in state after state that's adopted an Access to Justice Commission. President Deal was correct in saying that only half the courts authorize such a commission by order, but every court but one actually puts a justice on this commission. Maine is the only state that has an informal commission separate and apart from the court. In every other state that's engaged in this process, justices have played a leading role in the court. In response to an earlier question, I think it's important to point out that this commission, when it does its work, is not going to represent on a one-man, one-vote, one-person, one-vote basis every single stakeholder in the system. But it will draw a coalition of leaders together, the very leaders that you would expect to have on that letter of support that goes to the MacArthur Foundation, that goes to the state legislature, that goes to the Congress, of people who say that this idea that we think is a good one, whether it's more funding for civil legal services or some kind of infrastructure support for supporting people who need access to courts and can do it by themselves, or for additional support for lawyers who are providing pro bono services, the people who are on this commission, those are the names you'd expect to see on such a letter of support. You'd expect to see legislators, and you'd expect to see business people, and you'd expect to see lawyers, and you'd expect to see judges. So it is critical at this stage for us to have this kind of organization. In fact, the best proof of that is, to this point, we have not been, we as judges, you as justices, have not been as involved as they have been in other states, and so we think we need to move to this natural next step to improve our performance in this area. And we have the examples in other states to show us what we can do. In response to Justice Proster's questions, I think that President Deal was very careful to try to avoid saying that fundraising is the only goal of an Access to Justice Commission. When the word primary is used, sometimes people believe that that's exclusive of other goals. But if you had to say that fundraising was a goal, I think that everybody would have to agree on that. Because one of the things that Access to Justice Commissions are successful in is persuading legislatures, and really beyond the legislatures, to persuade taxpayers that funding civil legal services is a valuable and important goal. Not the only goal, though. I'd name two others that are important, too. This commission will be valuable in leading lawyers to provide more pro bono services. In Wisconsin, maybe a quarter of the lawyers fulfill their obligation to serve the needs of the poor. It's one that all of us made a vow to when we were sworn into the bar, and about a quarter of lawyers do that. Access to Justice Commissions around the country have been persuasive with lawyers in leading them to improve their pro bono performance. Another thing Access to Justice Commissions do is they organize people to look at the access points to the justice system and help modify those access points to make it easier for people to represent themselves, for non-lawyers to be able to help people and for lawyers to have a better way to spread their services around to the people who need them. So, for example, if it turns out that one of the critical needs that people without lawyers have is to represent themselves when their own family's government benefits are at stake, and if there's a procedural aspect to preserving those benefits or retaining them or trying to regain them after they've been lost, access to justice commissions are useful in identifying where those points are and then going to the authority that they need to go to try to see if they can modify those rules, whether it's the Social Security Administration or a county welfare agency.
I bet the legal services groups can tell you that right now.
In fact, those would be very valuable resources to involve in this commission. But they can't do it by themselves.
No, but they can tell you without all this elaborate organization.
Telling us and then changing it are two different things. Certainly gathering the information is important to us, but we want to improve it.
Well, what about the state bar?
Sorry?
What about the state bar? Can't it do it?
Hence we have the Bridging the Gap study. The state bar has studied this, but the state bar can't change it by itself. In fact, it hasn't changed. And one thing we've been able to identify by looking across the country is that the missing piece is judicial leadership. Mm-hmm. The other missing piece is this. We know that major change in this day and age, particularly in lean budget times, depends on a coalition of support that spreads across all three branches. We're not kidding ourselves that the money that the court might offer to a commission like this is generated by the court. And I don't mean to suggest that we're going to assess our way out of this problem. We could assess $100 per lawyer in the state, we'd only raise $10 million.
It's a good start.
It's a good start, but our study showed that we need $32 million every biennium just to serve the people who show up now and are turned away. We don't even count the people who don't even show up because they don't think anybody will help them or because they don't know about these services. What I mean to say is this, to achieve real change in this field, you need to have a coalition of support, and the state bar is only one part of a coalition.
I agree with that, but a coalition of 17 people is only as good as staff, because you don't have 17 people with full-time jobs, full-time families, full-time recreation, full-time whatever, unless you have full-time staff committed to this. And it sounds to me, if you're really going to do a good job, and I didn't study it carefully enough to know, what do the other commissions have in terms of staff? Half-time, full-time, six full-time? What do they have?
It varies from state to state.
And
Texas has a very well-developed staff. Washington has a well-developed
people?
Staff. I don't know. Jeff Brown will be able to answer that in detail. Yeah. But let me say this, whether the staff is two or five.
It says we've got a chart. I think did Teresa Owens develop it? Someone developed the staff, and it says administrative staff. Doesn't tell me how many. Doesn't take it's 5 or 10. You know, I've watched California, for example. It's a much bigger state, 35 million people. It's a huge geographical area. And when they do pro bono, which is an area I'm familiar with, I mean, we have a 40% person doing pro bono. And then gathering enough volunteers and judges and lawyers and public librarians to make an effective program. I mean, California throws, I don't know how many, more than 5, more than 10, just on that, let alone all the counties and the court systems do. So, to talk about this, doing what you do, which is terrific, I mean, you have to be realistic and tell me how much staff do you need.
Maybe this is the ultimate point of realism. Maybe we'll just call it pragmatism. If this commission can't raise enough money to support itself, it'll be a failure in the even larger goal, which is to raise the money for civil legal services and for the other services we need. And the only way to find out is to start it off and see if it goes.
That's the point. The point is that you're going to have to raise money to perpetuate this commission. You're going to have to raise it either from private funding, which I have suggested to several of you do before you bring in the petition and get private funding, or you're going to raise it from the legislature. And then Mr. Abbott's going to come up and say, you're taking money away from my program, and I deliver legal services right to the poor, no middleman.
I think there's three questions in that question.
At least.
Answer each of the three of them. The first question that's in there is the question of whether this organization should raise money.
Mm-hmm.
This organization is dedicated to the administration of justice. Mm-hmm. Judges have the full authority to raise money for the administration of justice.
Watch
this
out.
Court has sought grants. This court itself has signed documents seeking grant money, and this organization would put judges in no different position. This is at the core of the administration of justice, and so I don't think a judge should flinch at the opportunity to sign a letter that would have a realistic chance of winning money for the courts. The second question that's implicit in your question, Chief, is whether or not this money comes from the legislature. It's true, it comes from the legislature, but to be really truthful about it, it comes from the taxpayers. It comes from all of us. The way, though, that the governor, in the governor's budget, and the court, in its budget, and the legislature, frankly, in its own budget for its own operations, demonstrates to the taxpayers that it's using their money wisely is by setting wise priorities. And so when this court decides that what the people need are courts where if they don't speak English, there's an interpreter, we make that as a priority in our budget. Even though we don't raise the money to pay for interpreters, we tell the legislature interpreters are key to the administration of justice. And I would expect down the road that a coalition of support for access to justice will impress this court that among its budget priorities should be a contribution to the operation of this organization that will demonstrate to the people that this court takes access to justice seriously, and likewise for the governor, and likewise for the legislature. The third question that's implicit in the chief's question is, how do you go out and raise funds, and shouldn't we go out and raise the funds first? Well, think about the MacArthur Foundation or any other large foundation that hasn't given all of its funds to Mr. Madoff and still has some money available for us to use. What they would love to see is a letter that's signed by the stakeholders in this system. And the stakeholders are legislators, the governor, the justices of the Supreme Court, the bar, the law schools, the legal services providers, WIS staff. Those are the people that are organized in this group. And so what we're asking for is the authority to compose the consensus, the coalition, that would then go out and seek the very funds we're talking about. For the state bar to go and get these funds now, we'll have some chance, but think about how we improve those chances if we improve the size of the coalition that's seeking them.
I was thinking about this as I was preparing this morning earlier. I was thinking about the structure that you have in your petition and in the order. I was thinking of the story of the farmyard animals who wanted to give a surprise for the farmer, and they wanted to prepare a breakfast for him, special breakfast for the holidays. And they were talking among and between themselves. They thought, what's his favorite breakfast? What are we going to give him? And they came up with the idea, we know it's bacon and eggs. And all of a sudden, the chicken stepped forward and said, well, I'll be happy to contribute. But the pig kind of cleared his throat. And that's the difference between contribution and commitment, is the moral of that story. And I looked at the structure and the funding provision that Justice Prosser referred to, $20,000 the first year. I looked at the organizational contemplation, meeting four times a year.
Minimum of four
Minimum
times a year.
Okay. I looked at it at four times a year, but you're right. And I thought, to me, that's a contribution. That in order to be a commitment, and picking up off the chief's comment, in order to really make it work, you need staff. You need staff. And President Deal, of course, referenced $300,000 that was set aside. The figures that I saw here were the $20,000 the first year, and then $50,000 to $60,000 the second and third year. $20,000 just didn't seem to, have the energy, the commitment. So can you respond to those concerns, the difference between commitment and contribution in both the structure and how it's set up?
Sure. Let me talk about that in two different ways. I'm not authorized to speak for the bar. I'm sure President Deal will come back up and speak for the bar if necessary. But at least the way that it's been envisioned from the time that this recommendation was made in our report to the State Bar back in 2007, that this commission would be staffed by Jeff Brown, that this is one of his many responsibilities, but one that he's already been serving in getting us this far. So that means we'd have a very talented staff member, part-time, to be working on this commission, and that first year's expenses, I think, would be dedicated in part to account for what part of his salary is involved in contributing his efforts, but also to pay the meeting expenses of the commissioners. And if there's a need for expenses beyond that, for publication expenses or for obtaining written resources, that would be covered. As the commission goes forward and as it designs its agenda and as it starts to accomplish things, then obviously there's going to be a need for greater staff resources, and then maybe we tap that whole $300,000. I'm not in a position to commit that. I am in a position to say that there's no reason why Wisconsin can't do what Texas has done and Washington has done and other states which have developed successful commissions. Because once you build a coalition for change and people are committed to making a change, they're going to demand a staff and they're going to find a way to fund that staff. And this gives us the opportunity to do that. Let me address the question in a second way. We drafted this order for the court as an SCR simply because we had a model available to us. We had the Client Protection Fund, which is part of the SCRs. This court believes in protecting clients who have been let down by their lawyers, and it created a body under the SCR and delegated certain authority to the State Bar to make sure it operated. So that was a model for us. But we understand that the court may not be ready to enshrine an Access to Justice Commission in an SCR. And if that's the case, then set up a temporary order. Set up one that sunsets in 3 years or sunsets in 5 years and give it the opportunity to go. And then we'll find out whether everybody in this coalition is committed. It's true that if only judges get behind this, it will do really no better than the State Bar can do. But if our aspirations come true and other people are willing to join in this coalition, then I think we're going to provide that commitment that will provide funds in excess of what the State Bar is willing to provide at this point.
Judge Sankovitz, let me interrupt you if I might at this
sure.
point. As I listened to the presentations this morning and as I listened to the presentations earlier when various members of the committee visited the justices, I kept thinking and I continue to keep thinking, isn't this somewhat duplicative of WISTAF's mission? And shouldn't we perhaps be thinking about expanding WISTAF staff or doing something like that rather than creating a new group?
So if I understand the question right, what you'd be proposing is transforming WISTAF into an Access to Justice Commission.
Well, in many ways, it seems to me that they have very similar missions to what's outlined here. And WISTAF certainly has been asked to be involved in administering the funds that are being raised presently. When we go to their meetings, there's lots of discussion at their meetings about expanding their fundraising capabilities. And I notice that included in your proposed order is an indication of cooperation with WISTAF. But my concern is, are we duplicating the mission of WISTAF, and would it be simpler to add to WISTAF staff rather than create a whole new group?
I think you can cut that down into two parts.
Sure.
In one distinct regard, there is no duplication, because WISTAF is a conduit for funds to civil legal services. The money is collected, WISTAF has the funds, it determines who should be granted those funds, according to some very well-developed and well-tested means for deciding who's in the best position to use these funds most efficiently. And what we've proposed as an Access to Justice Commission does none of that. There's no conduit, there's no grant making, there's no evaluation or auditing or regulation of any of the providers. So there is no duplication along those lines. There is potential duplication in that WSTAF has the aspiration, it has the ambition to raise funds beyond its rulemaking authority to collect funds from lawyers and from interest on legal trust accounts, to go into other fields so that it can expand the amount of funds that it can then distribute. And to that extent, the Access to Justice Commission and WSTAF would duplicate. However, WSTAF hasn't been given the authority and it doesn't now fully function as an effort to go out and raise these additional funds. And furthermore, as broad as WSTAF's support is, as broad as its board is, it's not as broad as what we've proposed in the Access to Justice Commission. And I think that maybe what we'd be thinking about then is whether, if you're going to expand WSTAF, can you keep separate that conduit function so that this Access to Justice Commission doesn't become kind of like the lawyer czar in the state, the equivalent of a car czar here in Wisconsin, but still allow it to provide this coalition for support, monetary and non-monetary? Or is it better to keep WSTAF operating the way it has, where it's very successful, and not tinker with that model yet, see what happens with the Access to Justice Commission, and then down the road, if it's necessary, merge the two. So I think we can keep them apart, and I don't think we would do damage to WSTAF's success.
The thing I've talked to you about, Skonring about, Steele about, Mr. Brown about, has been to try and find an organizational structure for Access to Justice Commission that is not as complicated, number one. Number two, doesn't have a court set up an organization and yet rely on somebody else to staff it. Doesn't make sense to me to have a court organization and have rely on another entity to staff it, even though it's a, quote, court-related entity like the bar. And I think that Justice Crooks is trying to, although we haven't discussed this, sort of got the same sense and is trying to get a structure that makes better sense to us. I, for one, do not oppose FAS, stated positively. I favor an Access to Justice Commission. I just don't see that the organizational structure of this one accomplishes the goals that have been set forth when you have part-time staff not controlled by the commission, but controlled by he who pays controls.
Absolutely. So let me
paid by an outside entity, which you don't think is good enough to be the Access to Justice Commission. So I've been trying to push everybody, including myself, and I have not been very successful with myself, to get a structure that makes better sense.
Let me see if I can then expand on Justice Bradley's metaphor. This is a real chicken and egg problem.
Well, that wasn't her metaphor, whether it's chicken
don't
and egg.
Don't forget about the pig.
I think once we decide to serve bacon to the court, the pig's history. So let me concentrate on the chicken.
Not while I'm the chief.
Okay, well, how about soy? Should we work on soy instead of...
Now we're talking.
I share that ambition, Chief. I think it would be great if this court had a body that was solely controlled by, funded by, and organized by the court.
And you know, we can't do that because we don't have the resources, and we've talked about that.
Exactly. So we think about the two main sources of support for something as important as this. One is taxpayer revenue, one is private foundation money. And we think about what's the best way to organize a campaign to win that kind of support. And I'm not talking about civil legal services. I'm not talking about the ultimate goal, which is lawyers for people who need lawyers and can't do without and can't afford them. I'm talking about just enough to have the staff to do this right.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you want to go to the legislature or if you want to go to a private foundation and win this kind of money, you need a letter signed by 17 people. And those 17 people are the people who would be part of this commission. I think if you had a letter that was signed by 7 Supreme Court justices, or a separate letter that's signed by the president of the state bar, or a separate letter that's signed by all the legal service providers in the state, or a separate letter that's signed by a couple of legislators, or a separate letter by the governor, you're not going to make the headway that you need to develop a funding base to create this organization and make it successful. I think that our alternative to a commission like this is to go get the money first, and I think we'll end up having informally the same kind of effort. But I think that there'll be some suspicions about an informal effort when the court puts its imprimatur on something and says that an access to justice commission gets the same regard from the court as a client security protection fund or a board of bar examiners or other organs that the court has created and delegated in part to other people to operate and depends on others to support, then I think people sit up and say, you know, in Wisconsin they take this seriously.
Well, what about on that, setting up an access to justice commission, then its first job is to get funding so it can support itself?
I think that goal is potentially obvious. I tried to figure out a way to write that into the whereas clauses because you couldn't put that into an SCR. But if there was a way that the court could explicitly make that the goal, you know, at the end of 3 years, there's either funding for the future or it's over. That might make it clear to the commission what its real priority needs to be.
And that is its real priority for the first 3 years.
Every organization that is serious about its goals has to be serious about self-preservation at first. Mm-hmm. One thing I think that this court has demonstrated through efforts on a variety of fronts is that if we're going to protect justice in a state, we have to protect the Supreme Court and the courts. And a lot of effort has been put in by this court to make sure that our courts are funded, to make sure that this court is funded, to make sure that we have the things in place that we need to be able to do justice. We have ambitions beyond just having open courtrooms and having judges who are qualified and trained to serve as well as they do. But those other ambitions that we have beyond are almost secondary to making sure that we have the courts open in the first place. And I think there's an analog to what we want to do here with the Access to Justice Commission. Let me see if I could just pull two other strings together based on earlier questions. There is this notion that if an Access to Justice Commission goes and seeks funds from the legislature or from private foundations, that we compete with organizations that are actually on the front line providing the services. And I think that there's a fallacy in that approach that needs to be put on the table. And the fallacy in that approach is that this is a zero-sum game. It's true that funding for these kinds of services is limited, but I don't think we've reached the ceiling yet. I don't think we've made our case to the people who could provide the money and would understand the benefits of what kinds of gains could be accomplished by a commission like this. So it's too early to say if we fund this commission, it means fewer lawyers in Oconto, or if it means fewer lawyers in Milwaukee, or it means fewer lawyers in Beloit. To the contrary, what you can see from the experience of commissions like this in other states, in Texas, in Washington, in other states where both private and legislative funds have been directed towards a variety of different justice initiatives, that these justice commissions are successful in expanding the pie. So I don't think we have to worry about competing. And you know what? My time's limited, so I don't want to take away from other speakers, so I'm going to save my other comment to see if it's really important.
Any questions for Judge Stankiewicz? Justice Prosser.
Both you and President Diehl have talked about expanding the pie. I don't quite understand that metaphor.
I don't mean to say that we're going to take more funds away from taxpayers than are already taken from them. But of the funds that are taken from taxpayers to fund government, a larger share of them should be spent on access to justice. One case that needs to be made that we couldn't make when we put together our study commission was to show what the cost benefits are, I should say, what the benefits are for a given cost of providing these kinds of services. We, in our commission, through Jeff Brown, enrolled the University of Wisconsin in doing a cost-benefit study of services provided to domestic violence victims and showed that there is a cost-benefit advantage to providing emergency legal planning for domestic violence victims. One of the pursuits of a commission like this, as has been a pursuit across the country, is to show that if you provide legal services in other fields, for example, in landlord-tenant law, or in child welfare, or in public assistance, that spending some money on legal assistance up front actually saves the government money down the road because the high cost of emergency services provided to those families can be avoided. Demonstrating that, studying that, documenting that, that's a way of building a case for saying, of the pie that the government has available, and given the slice we have, a little bit bigger slice for us might mean that we could reduce the size of the slice for other services government provides. That's what I mean by increasing the size of the pie. And maybe I should add, certainly if we make an impression on private foundations, that increases the pie too.
One of the concerns I have is this, and let me put this in very personal terms. I served a long time in the legislature, and the First Amendment, the first time I was successful in getting public money for anything, was an amendment to get money to pay for private bar public defender services. I was always supportive of public defender private bar. We have not changed the indigency standards in any significant way since the late 80s.
When you say we, as a state?
As a state.
Right.
And frankly, when I was serving as Speaker of the Assembly, no one came to me and said, we have a problem that you would be interested in solving. I didn't realize that problem existed until I got on this court. So that problem hasn't been solved, but you would be creating, I think, an effort to get public money in direct competition to adequate funding for private bar public defenders.
In the sense that it's a zero-sum game, you're right. But in the sense that both of these are objectives that our justice system can't survive without, then both of these are goals that need to be pursued. There are aspects of access to justice commissions in other states where efforts are made to support both legal representation in the civil field as well as the criminal field. Our study has focused on the civil field, and these efforts are mainly organized around the civil field. But I think I can say, based on the people who'd be around this table, the people who would be appointed to this commission, that I think people would be very sensitive to anything that would defeat funding for some litigants in order to provide funding for others. So I think that's maybe the short answer to that is, you're absolutely right, and that's something this commission would have to have its eye on. I don't think it's necessarily the result, though, because I think that a court and a commission that stand for justice is not going to stand, or is not going to let its efforts defeat justice in another realm. Does that solve your concern? Does that address your concern?
It addressed my concern. I'm not sure it solved my concern.
Maybe I should solve it this way. You were Speaker of the Assembly. If the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court had come to you and said, who's your best person to give us to solve this problem, that would have been a task you would have welcomed. You would have found a person from Appleton, a person from Green Bay, a person from Oshkosh, who had experience in the field that that commission needed most, whether it was fundraising, whether it was understanding the effect of legal regulation on business, whether it was the understanding the effect of our laws on people who live on Indian tribes, or who live among Indian tribes. And you would have found that person and said, here's something where we can make a difference. This is not just some blue ribbon commission. This is not something that's creating what we like to call shelfware. This is something that will make a difference. And you have my vote. Think of the changes that you could have accomplished.
Chief Justice has gone to the legislature several times and asked for a change in indigency standard. He was heard, and I think you have a lot of legislators who want to do it. And it nearly got done, but they were short money, and it didn't get done. So I think the point of Justice Prosser's question, or a point, is that there are limited funds, and then how do you balance, and what are your priorities? Do civil first, criminal first, et cetera, with limited funds. And you don't have to really answer that, because it's the legislative job to the priorities.
Well, you know, when Dee Dee Rungstad, who's here, went to the legislature, if you haven't met Dee Dee, you should. Dee Dee's the kind of person who this commission should employ. because of how skillful she is at organizing support for civil legal services. When she went to the legislature and raised $1 million that hadn't been raised before, nobody on the court, nobody in the circuit courts that I'm aware of, nobody in the civil legal services field said, let's not take $1 million for civil legal services because we'll never get the indigency standards approved. What we said was, this is justice, and we are not doing justice in our courts without this money. Her efforts were amazing. All of us, I think, were amazed by that. Having said that, there's a $32 million need out there, not a $1 million need. And I think, as successful as Dee Dee is, imagine what she could be doing if she had on her team all the people who would be appointed to a commission like this. That's what I'd love to give her to get her work done, and imagine how successful she could be.
Does your $32 million need take into account victims of medical malpractice?
Let me tell you how we came up with that number, and I think the answer lies in that. We studied how much money is spent currently on every legal service provider in the state, no matter what the source of the funding is. We also studied those service providers and found out how many people show up for services and are turned away. And we found a rough proportion. For every person that's served, another person is turned away, which is a way of saying that if you took their budget and multiplied it times two, you'd at least have enough people, enough money for the people who are showing up. My hunch is, based on what I know of legal service providers, is that they do not provide services directly to victims of medical malpractice, at least where medical malpractice is the issue. Now, obviously, somebody who's been a victim of medical malpractice may have a housing need, may have a benefits need, may have a criminal need, for all I know. And so maybe they're serving them, but not serving that particular need directly. And I don't think that $32 million is going to supplant the work of lawyers who represent people who suffer from medical malpractice.
What I'm getting at is this. If someone is a victim of medical malpractice to the tune of $1.4 million, that person is going to be able to find an attorney if there's any way of proving the case. But if someone has been victimized by medical malpractice to the tune of $7,500, forget it. There is no attorney who would take that case. Why isn't there concern about that problem?
I would say that there is concern about that problem. That concern may be dwarfed by the number of people who have other problems that are even more threatening to their, you know, to their family, to their way of life. A person who's a victim of $7,500 worth of medical malpractice may have a serious concern. But somebody without a house, somebody whose family's been broken apart, somebody who depends on a certain kind of medical benefit, a wheelchair, a special bed, a special supply of medication to keep them mentally stable, those concerns may be even more important. And I think to utter the theme that we've all been saying, times are tough. We'll start with the most important concerns and work our way down the list. And like I said also, if this person with those kinds of medical concerns may have corollary concerns, they lose their job because of their, because they've been a victim of malpractice, they lose their house, they don't qualify for the benefit that they used to qualify for, which requires them to work, those people may, in a corollary way, receive the benefits of whatever work this commission could do. And that's the best I can offer, if that's satisfactory.
Thank you, Judge Sankovitz.
Thank you.
Mr. Ebbett? But the court has your, I think it's your submissions.
Chief Justice Abrahamson, members of the court, may it please the court. I appreciate this opportunity to address the court about this Access to Justice Commission. I was not going to oppose its creation, but now I am because I'm learning that it may take Dee Dee Rongstad away from legal action. So, and I wouldn't like that. I'm Executive Director of Legal Action of Wisconsin, and with me today are Dee Dee Rongstad, who was our Development Director and who was instrumental in obtaining the $1 million state appropriation for legal services, Patricia Risser, who is our Volunteer Lawyers Project Coordinator, oversees our pro bono efforts, and she's also a member of the State Bar's Legal Assistance Committee, and James Botsford, who is the Director of the Indian Law Office of Wisconsin Judicare. I think that you've heard and you will hear, and there is a lot of contribution and a lot of commitment. But the things we are talking about trying to achieve are very difficult. They're very tough tasks. The question that's raised by this petition is very important. It's whether the cost of establishing and operating an Access to Justice Commission, costs in the form of time, money, and the diversion of attention from the direct representation of clients, are justified by, one, the probability of success of achieving certain equal justice goals, and two, the need to achieve certain other goals. In answering this question, it is important to take into account what has already been accomplished in this state of Wisconsin without the existence of such a commission, and whether it is the absence of this commission, such a commission, that has been critical to our failure to achieve certain goals. Much of this question is addressed in our written comments, so I won't repeat those there except to highlight the major points. The thing that we most need, that we desperately need in this state, is resources to serve low-income people. We are in dire straits in this regard. That's the first task.
That means money.
And
from your perspective, if I understand it, money to hire more legal aid lawyers. And I use legal aid in a broad sense.
That's right. That's right. It means money, absolutely.
For legal aid lawyers.
Yes. Primarily, I mean, there are areas where paralegals or lay advocates could work. There are areas,
but with legal aid societies, and I'm
correct.
Again using it broad. I don't mean to name any particular group.
That's right. That's right. Now, an Access to Justice Commission may be able to help in developing resources to increase equal justice in the state. It may not. The petition, I think, is vague and it's broad. The question is whether it will. We've already made substantial strides in Wisconsin in developing resources, but it may be useful to examine the resource enhancements that in other states are credited to the Access to Justice Commissions to see where we are and how we compare. There's been mention made of other states. There, of course, are 49 other states, about 26 of them, by my count, have Access to Justice Commissions, so you could do a broader survey, but there are certain things that have been claimed that these Access to Justice Commissions have achieved. The first and foremost, of course, it is claimed that they have achieved significant state appropriations. And in some states, I think that they have, but we need to remember that we obtained $1 million in the state appropriations without the existence of an Access to Justice Commission. This is, I mean, I think 17 names on a letter helped, but the way this is done is through a lot of basic telephoning, meeting arranging, identifying key constituents, working up talking points day after day after day, and not just sending a letter with 17 prominent people. That's the process that we engaged in order to obtain the $1 million, and it did cost us money. We invested significant sums in that effort, and it was successful. Now, can an Access to Justice Commission increase our appropriation from $1 million to higher? And I'm very appreciative of the fact that the State Bar's report set forth bravely a figure of $16 million, and I think that's right. But can a commission like this increase that? Maybe in the future, this year? I don't think that an Access to Justice Commission is going to make any difference this year with the kind of deficit the state's looking at. In the future, if the deficit's whittled down, who knows? Maybe it will. Maybe it won't. But is a commission like this going to be set up to perform the kind of day-to-day constituent identification, bringing constituents together with legislators, formulation of talking points, obtaining testimony before Joint Finance Committee? Is a commission like this going to be able to do this without spending at least what we did on staffing? I doubt it.
How much did you spend?
$62,000.
Was in your material?
Yes.
$62,000.
Yes. With the three providers. Another achievement that's claimed on behalf of Access to Justice Commissions is changing IOLTA from opt-out to mandatory, and is claimed by Mississippi and Alabama and Maine. Well, Wisconsin, we have mandatory IOLTA. They also claim that the commissions have been responsible for approving, for getting the courts to approve IOLTA comparable interest. Of course, the petition's been filed with this court, it's been heard by this court, so that issue is before us. Another claim to success to increasing resources has been an increase in the Supreme Court's pro hoc vice fee. In Alabama, that generates $120,000 a year. There has been discussion of pro hoc vice fees in Wisconsin. There's been some on the WISTAF board. There's been some in the Wisconsin Equal Justice Fund in the past. I think Legal Aid Society has received some pro hoc vice funds. Texas, but as to pro hoc vice fees, one, it's questionable whether those fees are going to generate that much funding and whether that would be possible. Texas has been mentioned, and a number of things are claimed for the Texas Access to Justice Commission. It's claimed that the commission obtained $2.5 million from the Attorney General's office for legal assistance for crime victims. Whether if we instituted and implemented a commission in Wisconsin, we could obtain that amount or a significant amount from the Attorney General's office for this, I think, is an open question. This would be useful. It would supplement the Federal Victims of Crime Act funds that are already in existence.
Mr. Abbott, you started out saying you're not opposed to this. Sounds to me like you're not in favor.
I think that's an accurate assessment of my statement of my position. I'm trying to ascertain what the specific detailed function of the commission would be, other than bringing everyone together, because I think we can do that now. But I'm trying to look to other states and say, well, here's what they've done. Does a commission make sense in Wisconsin to do that? And in some areas it may, but as my written submission indicates, in resource enhancement first and foremost, and then maybe later central planning of systems. So I'm definitely opposed to the commission's starting out with central planning of systems. Also in Texas, the commission apparently instituted a fee on sexually oriented businesses, and that the money generated from that goes for to legal services for victims of sexual assault. So this supplements the domestic violence money that's available. Perhaps that's possible here. Texas also claims credit for its commission's instituting an attorney assessment of $65 per attorney. Half of that goes to civil legal services, $32.50. Half of it goes to criminal defense. And so in Wisconsin, as you're all very familiar, we have a $50 assessment, which all goes to civil legal services. So, and that was done without an access to justice commission. So we're a little bit ahead of Texas in that regard. And the question would be, if a commission is set up, will a commission increase that assessment over what's sure to be some resistance from the private bar? Another thing that's claimed for Texas's commission is a dues statement opt-out benefiting legal services. Now, we tried that in Wisconsin in the 90s at some point. It wasn't an opt-out, it was more of an opt-in, that there'd be a statement on the, there'd be a box on the dues statement where a lawyer could check a contribution. I believe it was to go to WISDAF. The state bar declined to permit it to be on the dues statement. For a while, there were inserts saying you can contribute to WISDAF and civil legal services, but I don't think that generated very much money, and I don't think that has continued. Another area is the institution of fines and fees, filing fees to legal services. This has been done in Maine and Mississippi. We in the legal services community have frequently considered at least filing fees for additional revenue for us, but it's always been suggested to us that we defer to the courts in this area because that's a primary source of financial support for the courts. And lastly, these access to justice commissions have indicated that they have brought private bar campaigns together. They've been responsible for combined private bar campaigns. We have the Wisconsin Equal Justice Fund that holds the Eisenberg Dinner every fall that raises about $250,000 to $300,000 each year. Legal Aid Society does its own campaign. Other providers conduct campaigns of their own. Maybe the total raised from the private bar might be maximum $500,000 a year, probably a little less than that. The question is, could the institution of a commission raise more than that in a combined campaign or otherwise? Another aspect of resource enhancement that Judge Sankovitz mentioned is raising the profile, essentially raising public awareness of the need for legal services. A couple of the states, at least New Mexico and Colorado, held a series of hearings around the state, 10 or 12 hearings around the state, and then the testimony elicited at those hearings was put together in a report that highlighted the need. We, of course, the state bar has done the report highlighting the need and the lack of resources. Hearings could be sponsored by an Access to Justice Commission. It probably wouldn't hurt. In sum, on this point, the huge need in Wisconsin, as I indicate in the written materials, is increased resources. There's no point planning a system until we get enough resources to do 30% of what we need to do. Otherwise, it really is rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. Possibly, this could be done as a staged implementation. Start with resource enhancement, and once we substantially increase those, then we can talk about systems planning. The Washington State Access to Justice Commission, which is used by as a model by a lot of people, began as its first 2 years were for evaluation, and then it was reauthorized for 5 more years, and then it was made permanent. Well, a possible thing to do is to have the first period of a Wisconsin Access to Justice Commission be for evaluation for resource development, and then at the end of that, take a look at where it ought to go. My last major point is that, as I've said in my written submission, the mission statement is extremely broad, and it includes central planning of the delivery system. New Mexico does this through its Access to Justice Commission. The state plan is adopted by and overseen by the Supreme Court. And the state plan has detailed recommendations in 11 areas. And I repeat, it's overseen by the Supreme Court. One area is priorities for client types and substantive law areas. The second is the geographical distribution of legal aid offices. A third area is staff allocation among the substantive law areas and offices. A fourth area is the organization of the delivery system, including determining points of entry.
Didn't we go through something like that with the Legal Services Corporation several years ago?
Yes, we did.
I remember it as one in which I was not directly involved, in which the court was not directly involved, that it was very contentious.
Yes, it was called state planning, and you were more fortunate than I was.
And this was state planning and funding from the National Legal Services Corporation. And if I remember it, it's been several years. They really would have preferred one, or maybe the maximum of two providers, so that there was organization and coordination, and rather than multiple providers. And finally, I think what are we down to? Three?
Two.
Major two. You're
two.
Down to two. That took a long time bargaining it out because they wanted one, if I remember this correctly.
You're correct. They wanted one, and they were persuaded to have two, and Legal Action merged with Western Wisconsin Legal Services.
And you're not too happy about the thought of going through that again, are you?
I think that would be an understatement.
I just want to put it on the record because some of the members of the court may not, because they weren't as involved in it as I was, may not remember that problem, and that's your punchline on that issue.
That's
I
right.
Assume.
And one.
Okay, finish.
One of the problems that I had with that process is that there was no baseline evaluation of the quality of legal services provided to low-income people, so that after we merged, there was no way to tell whether the merger, the reconfiguration of the delivery system, was better or worse or the same, because there was no baseline that they started with. They just thought it was a good idea in Washington, and then they imposed it on all the states.
Justice Prosser.
Mr. Abbott, you're talking about New Mexico right now? And these, all right. Could you please repeat your first point?
The first point is that the New Mexico state plan contains a detailed recommendation with regard to priorities for client types and substantive law areas.
But what is in substantive law areas? What does that mean?
Should you handle Med Mal?
Is housing law second or fifth? Should trust in the states be a priority at all? What areas of poverty law should the legal services attorneys in the state be providing advocacy in?
I should let you finish your list, but Judge Sankovitz talked about a possible goal of the commission being and I didn't fully understand this, but looking at the access points in the system of justice, which I took to mean at least possibly some changes in substantive law.
I certainly don't want to speak for him. The discussion of access points for us in the past has been things like, should there be six regional 800 numbers that people can call in to an office that represents those counties, or should there be one statewide 800 number where people can call one number, that's the access point. Do you have walk-in intake or telephone intake only? Walk-in is another access point. I don't know what Judge Sankovitz was referring to, but that's how I understand access points. The fifth major area is collaboration and coordination among providers. The sixth is professional development and training. The seventh is funding the state system, including priorities for the use of state funding, also expansion of federal funding, expansion of IOLTA revenues, the establishment of a pro hoc vice fee in federal court, which is my understanding the commission attempted to do, but the federal court was not interested, the support of the Equal Access to Justice Fund, and the promotion of CyPRE funds to go to legal services. The eighth area is external and internal program evaluations. The ninth is system oversight.
This is all New Mexico?
This is all New Mexico.
And it's all done by the Supreme Court?
It's all overseen by the Supreme Court.
You're just telling us, do we really want that kind of system in Wisconsin? Isn't that what you're telling
that
us?
That is my question.
Yeah.
The 10th is support for self-represented litigants.
Just and the tell us the total number without...
11th.
Okay.
And 11th is pro bono services. In Washington State, there are 18 service delivery regions, and they come up with 18 regional plans. And then they have a state plan oversight committee, and the Washington State Supreme Court provides the funding to facilitate the implementation of the plan. And that includes funding for the employment of contract staff to provide assistance to the 18 local regional planning teams.
You're just telling us it's a more complicated system than the one proposed for us.
Well, I don't know what... I don't know what's proposed for us in terms of the central planning of the delivery system.
That may be down the road.
I would like, if that happens, I would like it to be down the road after we have sufficient resources so that it means something.
You don't need another coordinator, do you?
No. That's right.
I just want to make your position clear. You're just trying to say why you don't want it, but you don't really support this.
I don't support it. I'm not flat out opposed. I'm not. It's vague enough. Maybe it could do something. I'm not sure it could do more than an expanded State Bar Legal Assistance Committee. It's just I don't want to stand here and say I'm dead set against it. But it's correct that I don't support it.
Because it's hard to be dead set against something that's essentially good, access to justice.
Yeah, I'm for that.
That's your business. Right. Right. That's what I'm trying to tell you. And that's why you're caught in a dilemma, because you're for access to justice. It's just that you don't know if this is the right vehicle.
Yes. I mean, key to me at this point, access to justice in whatever form, is many, many more resources. That's the problem we have, is resources.
Would you sum up, Mr. Abbott, please? Because
yes.
I'd like the court to finish with all of the... presenters before
I can. The question is, how do we pay for this commission if we're going to set it up? As to representation, if we do detailed central systems planning, how do we do it with only two legal services providers on the commission? And finally, one of the 12 lessons from successful state access to justice efforts, which was put out by the ABA Resource Center for Access to Justice Initiatives, is access to justice structures should be open and inclusive, place a priority on developing trust among the partners. Processes that are perceived as closed or exclusive can exacerbate the danger. Ideally, all the key institutional players should be at the table when plans and decisions are made. And that concludes.
And you don't think you have enough people at the table, if I understood your submission?
I do not. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Abbott. Thank you for your presentation, and thank you for your extensive written submissions. David Russell, counsel, La Crosse, Wisconsin.
Chief Justice Abramson, honorable members of the court, may it please the court, I sincerely thank you all for your consideration of this petition and all the information associated with it, and I thank the State Bar for its work. I support the general concept of the commission, but I have, as many of you have raised through your questions, some concerns and want to make some comments about the details. Here's where I'm coming from, my background in this stuff. I've been in the private practice of law in La Crosse for 30 years with the same 17 lawyer firm. I've had management responsibilities in that firm for the last 15 years. I have a varied practice, but many of my clients are people in financial distress or medical distress seeking disability benefits. In the 1980s, I served on the board of directors of Western Wisconsin Legal Services of La Crosse, which subsequently merged into Legal Action of Wisconsin. In 1993, I received the pro bono private lawyer award from the State Bar of Wisconsin. From 2000 to 2006, I was on the State Bar Legal Assistance Committee, and it was good to see a lot of familiar faces from that committee here today. I was term limited out of that committee. In 2006, with the help of a grant from the State Bar of Wisconsin, and while I was president of the La Crosse County Bar Association, we started a monthly free legal clinic in La Crosse, which quite candidly was copied after the clinic in Eau Claire, which I went up and visited. From 2006 to the present, I've been on the Board of Directors of Legal Action of Wisconsin. Mr. Ebbett, the Executive Director, just addressed you. In the office, I take lots of cold calls from desperate people in need. Yesterday, I had contact with 4 pro bono clients and 1 reduced fee client. Tonight, I'll be working at the free legal clinic. Tonight's the night for that. Tomorrow, during the noon hour, I'll be working at the Family Law Information Center at the courthouse, which the Chief Justice helped us dedicate.
Yeah, that's the pro bono center,
right.
For self-represented people.
Right, right.
La Crosse Bar is doing a wonderful job at that.
There are 3 general points I'd like to make, which I prepared before hearing all the discussion that's gone before me, so excuse me for if there's some repetition here. Number one, as to the membership of the commission. While I understand the value of having high-profile, figurehead-type folks on the commission, I think there should be more emphasis on the people in the trenches, such as legal service providers. This is their life. I don't always agree with Mr. Ebbett on things, as witness our last Board of Directors meeting, but I greatly respect his work, his knowledge, his commitment over many years. There's a lot of knowledge there that needs to be drawn upon. Secondly, I have some concern about what this group will do. I'd like to see more specifics. I admit that I have not looked at, as many in this room have, I believe, at the commissions in other states. I have not looked at that information. But out in the entryway, coming in here today, I heard someone describing to a member of the public, a layperson, this is about a group that will study access to justice. Enough study. We need to stop the bleeding out there. We need action. I favor less talk and more action. Under the current economic conditions, the people that this commission is designed to serve is increasing daily. And I don't know that we can spend 2 or 3 years talking about the problem. I'd rather see us take some action and maybe have it fail or go in the wrong direction, circle back and do it again, but do some stuff. As an example, we did lots of good things on the Legal Assistance Committee over the years, but occasionally I'd grow frustrated because of a lot of talk and not action. When the State Bar, through that committee, made grants available to local bar groups and organizations, such as for the legal clinic that I just described to you, things started happening. And that's good. The programs and projects that are kind of flowing from that work around the state didn't really require a large central government-type body to make them do some good. Thirdly, one thing I would hope the commission could do very quickly is to get private attorneys, encourage private attorneys, get private attorneys involved in this work on a pro bono basis. I think the commission should pay less attention to monitoring or supervising existing legal services providers. They've got their regulations, they've got their supervisory administrative agencies that they have to answer to all the time, and I think they do a good job doing that. An example, a big example to me, as a practice area where private attorneys could be persuaded or conscripted to help local groups, is family law. About 1/3 of all the people over the last 2 years that have come into the free legal clinic have been family law matters. Legal Action Wisconsin has to do triage. They don't have the resources that they need. That's why we're here today. So that they're only able to offer family law services to a few, primarily and first and foremost, those people and children who are in physical danger. There's a great family law need. So I'm hoping that the commission could come up with ways, using perhaps the carrot and not the stick, to involve private attorneys. I feel the need to say pardon my passion and to thank you again for your serious consideration of this very important matter.
Mr. Russell, then, on the totality of this, do you favor the court trying to set up a commission?
I think it's better to make the effort, Your Honor, better to make the effort and do it, because I think one big thing that it would do is generate a lot of publicity about the problems. And even if that publicity flows down to the, according to the study, 37% of low-income poor people know that there are free legal services available. I find that as an issue in my clinic tonight in La Crosse. There'll be a lot of people there tonight because I've put a small ad in the Sunday newspaper about it. But otherwise, getting the word out to the people who need to come, most of them don't have internet access. So if some of that trickles down so that the people who need it find out about it and can go talk at a meeting or go address a group or something like that, then I think it's better to try it than not to try it.
Even if it's not perfect.
Correct.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you for making this step. Michael Gonring, Legal Assistance Committee, State Bar of Wisconsin.
Hey, please the court. I didn't know I was speaking until I walked in here today, so I will be brief and even more superficial than usual. I take a real simplified look at all of this. There are people who are very eloquent about this and who have studied it and read it more than me, and you've heard from some of them today. And you know, with age comes reality, and the reality I always face is that I'm probably the dumbest person in the room most of the time. But so I look at this from a real simple point of view, and that is we have to do something, and this commission will do something. And what it'll do is help raise funds, and I appreciate all the issues involved in that. It will look at the state as a whole and say, how are we delivering legal services in the state? How are we helping people who do not have legal representation? No one is doing that now. Legal Action does wonderful work, and I was on that board for 10 years, and it was great work, and John and his folks do terrific work in Legal Aid and Judicare and Disability Rights Wisconsin, and everybody's doing great work, and they're maxed out to the ninth degree in what they can do. But nobody is looking at the totality of the situation and saying, what can we do better to provide legal services in this state? Everybody's doing it within their own mission and within their own budget and what they have available, but no one is taking a global look to this. And an example is Dave Russell, who just got up here and talked about his legal clinic in La Crosse. And that was, I think, the first, if not one of the first, grants our committee gave. And it's a terrific clinic, and it's a terrific idea. And why isn't it being done in every county in the state? No one has sat down and asked that question. No one is coordinating that. We sit back and wait for someone to send in a grant proposal on that. Before the hearing today, Ann Zimmerman and I had a conversation about an idea we have that we want to try out in the northern part of the state, probably in the 10th district. And it has an idea with a lot of possibilities, I think, in terms of providing pro bono legal assistance to people who can't get pro bono lawyers in sparsely lawyered counties. But that sort of thing shouldn't rely on me in private practice or Ann, who has a million things to do. It's an idea that should come from a lot of people with a fresh approach who haven't thought about this, who haven't devoted themselves to this, who can be in a commission and think about what we can do. The vision that we have on the Legal Assistance Committee about this commission is that it will be 17 members, not all of whom have thought about this before. We want to bring in fresh approaches to things. We want to bring in people from the business community. We want to bring in so-called conservatives who aren't living and dying with this issue, perhaps, as some of us are. And we want people to sit down and think about this and noodle it. And when I look at this, again, in my own simplified way, when I look at this, what do we have to lose to do this? Granted, we're asking you to put your name on it. I don't think it works without your name on it. I think that without the leadership of the Supreme Court, this thing is doomed to fail. But assuming we can get that, we have nothing to lose. The state bar is going to pay for 3 years. You know, I'm confident we can keep it going after that. I hope we can. Other states have. You know, can I sit here and tell you 100% that we're going to be funded in 3 years or we're going to have the ability? I can't tell you that. I mean, I can't even tell you how I'm going to pay for Christmas. But I think that, you know, I think there's a good chance. I think that with the right people and the right first commission, we can get something done. When I met with Justice Crooks a couple weeks ago and to talk about this, and we chatted about a time that he and I went in front of the State Bar Board of Governors in Sturgeon Bay, that had to be 7 or 8, maybe 10 years ago, with a very raw form of an access to justice study, which was finally accomplished in 2007, and asking the bar to fund it, and in vernacular, we were blown off. They tabled it, and we never heard from it again. And now the bar is behind it. The Board of Governors is unanimous in supporting this. They're going to fund it. What do we have to lose? Potentially, we have an awful lot to gain, and we have very little to lose. Nothing that I can see. So I have.
Thank you, Mr. Gunn. Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Gonring, not only for appearing today, but for all your work on the Legal Assistance Commission and for your work in trying to move this through. Mr. Hansen, David Hansen, President of Wisconsin Equal Justice Fund.
Justice, members of the Supreme Court, may it please the court. You'll have to pardon me, I've got a bad cold and I may sound a little foggier than usual. I want to make a couple of very simple points. They've been made before, but I think they deserve some emphasis. The Equal Justice Fund is a volunteer group of over 30 lawyers who are on a board who raise in excess of $300,000 each year for three supported organizations: Legal Action of Wisconsin, Wisconsin Judicare, and Disability Rights Wisconsin. We must never forget that there are people out there doing heroic work every day at levels of efficiency that government agencies and private law firms only dream about in terms of the delivery of services. There are a lot of things going right in our system, and the providers are a key block to that. So my first point is pay attention to that building block and what they have to say to you, because they are on the front lines. Second, our group, as one might imagine, and John Ebbett's on the board, is a group of lawyers who can't necessarily agree on everything, but I think we came to some basic conclusions. One, we are in favor of this commission. We are in favor because we have hope that the creation of this commission would create publicity, focus, and political horsepower behind a very serious problem in our state. But those hopes are tempered by our reservations. The number one issue is resources. We can't do anything about the expanding number of people who need these services. So the question is, how do we address that issue from a resource standpoint? If I were to talk about the mission of this Justice Commission, it would be funds, funds, and funds, and everything else is a far distant follow-up. And I think one can talk about this more broadly than funds. It's resources as well. It's volunteers. It's commitments from private members of the bar and a variety of other things. But the resources are what's really needed. And anything that diverts from the goal of getting those resources in the short term or the long term undercuts the mission. Things that add to that goal and mission in the short term are important. And I think the hope part of this for the Equal Justice Fund is that this commission will have a focus, will direct its energy to expanding resources, will not compete or direct other organizations trying to be part of the system, but will go to the table in the legislature. And I appreciate what Mr. Justice Prosser said about the scarcity of resources, but having a strong group to speak on behalf of this issue when budgets are decided and priorities are set is important.
Mr. Hansen, you raise about 300,000, a couple hundred thousand a year before. Is that done only through the dinner?
No, that's also private fundraising and contributions from individual bar members. The dinner raises approximately 225,000 to 250,000 a year. There's something in the neighborhood of 80,000 that comes in additional contributions from members of the bar.
If you had, if a commission was set up like this and its primary goal or immediate goal was to raise funds, would you go out of business?
Add business members?
No, would the Equal Justice Fund go out of business and just rely on this?
No.
You'd stay with that and you'd support these three?
We would want to be participants in the process. We would want to be cooperative and supportive. But we would not want the private fundraising effort to be diluted in this process. It's a concern. Just as an example, the court's $50 assessment for these things caused a lot of law firms to think twice about giving to the Equal Justice Fund because they said, well, we're paying our bar dues.
We gave it the office.
And, you know, the bar's report on access to justice and the unmet need was extremely important in demonstrating that that $50 was just a very, very small part of what's needed.
What this order does not say is what, when they raise the money, who gets it? I mean, when they go to the legislature and ask for money, who gets the money? I know that's not your...
From the standpoint of having some statewide focus and administrative capacity, WSTAF is certainly a place where that money could go.
Mm-hmm. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Does anyone wish to appear that we haven't heard? Okay, you've got 3 minutes. I have a call at 11:45.
My name is Jeff Brown. I'm the pro bono coordinator at the State Bar, and I just wanted to give you a chance. If there were particular issues related to the staffing and operations of a commission, I've been working on this issue for a couple of years now fairly intensely and talking to folks all over the country. And we've spent a lot of time looking at what other states are doing. And so this proposal before you is an outline of what a commission can do. It's not the blueprint for everything it will do. I guess the prior speaker who mentioned this being about the hope for what a commission could do is how I would phrase the petition and the proposal before you. The exact steps that it will take beyond its first year, I think a commission needs to spend a lot of time thinking through what it will do, and none of us can stand here today and tell you exactly what it will do, only that we hope that it will do at least in Wisconsin, what it's been able to do elsewhere.
Mr. Brown, one of the things that I still don't understand after listening to everybody this morning is $20,000 is what's going to be used for the first year. $300,000 is set aside someplace. What's that $300,000 all about? What's that supposed to do?
Understanding, I'm not a member of the Board of Governors, but my understanding is that the Finance Committee set aside in a reserve fund monies for access to justice efforts. As you know, the State Bar has, as one of its strategic goals, improving access to justice for Wisconsin residents. So this commission is one of those efforts, and the assumption is that up to half of my time at the State Bar will be devoted to this, and that's not included in the $20,000 number. The $20,000 number is just the out-of-pocket expenses towards the planning process for the first year of a commission.
Well, 17 people meeting will cost a lot of money.
It will cost.
Four times a year is going to cost $20,000 or close to it.
It will cost money the first year, and so a lot of the first year, I conceive of the first year of a commission as being a year of education and learning and planning. But the subsequent years are the years when the action begins, and so I think that's where the rest of some of the rest of the reserve fund at the bar is there for subsequent efforts of a commission to support those efforts along with others, along with whatever funds the court is able to obtain from the legislature or that the legislature appropriates for other purposes, such as the $1 million appropriation.
Any questions of Mr.
Jeff, did you draft this?
I had a big hand in drafting that, yes, along with others.
But why did you want an SCR?
Well, actually, the idea of an SCR is just an option. I wouldn't say an SCR is my first choice or my recommendation to you, because I think it circumscribes a little bit more what the commission can do and reduces its flexibility.
So what is your first choice?
The first choice would be to take the approach that other states have taken, which is an order based on your inherent authority as the Supreme Court.
The order would say the same thing that the petition says, that this order says.
The proposed order could easily be revised to remove all references to the SCR, a new SCR chapter, and simply say that a commission shall be formed and its functions or purposes shall be these, its members shall be these, and so on. That's the model that was used to draft the petition for you. The model for the petition before you came from the orders that were issued in the South Carolina Supreme Court, Mississippi, and some of the others, Washington as well.
The only difference is whether it's labeled an SCR or not, whether it appears in the statute books.
Correct.
Whether it's just an order setting it up.
Would it be unreasonable if I said that I was a little concerned that some of the propositions in the whereas section of the order might be used against the court at some time?
I think the whereas provisions are essentially background and support for the ultimate order. The exact wording of those could be adjusted if there was a potential for some of those to backfire on the court. That's not something that we don't, our purpose is not to hurt the court, the court's role as the head of the judicial branch, the bar, legal services providers. We've tried to avoid doing anything that will alienate those who really should be supporting this.
Any other questions? If not, then thank you, Mr. Brown.
Thank you.
Anyone else who wants to appear on this? Seeing none, we'll take a recess. We'll reconvene after lunch. What's a good time? What, you want 1:30? 1:30, we'll reconvene. Thank you very much. And thank you for everyone that's here. When I was talking about contribution and commitment, when I look at this audience, the people that are here, the commitment that each and every one of you have, my hat's off to you. I'm not sure what we're going to do with this. The discussion will ensue at 1:30, but one thing I am sure of, that we owe a debt of gratitude for the efforts of everyone who's here today in your continuing interest in providing legal services in this state. So thank you, and we will
reconvene at 1:30.